John Fung once stated that there are two kinds of people in the world. People who think too much and people who don't think enough. He was referring specifically to concentration practice. But his statement applies to other areas of the practice as well. Some people come to the practice, they want to be told what to do and they don't want to have to think about it. They want a series of instructions that they can follow, 1, 2, 3, 4. And then at the end of the list, they'll be guaranteed results. That, of course, places all the responsibility on the teacher. So if the results don't come out, then the teacher was wrong. It wasn't there. The student's fault, it was the teacher's fault. And the attitude of not wanting to think also turns a lot of the areas of the practice into ritual, things you go through, simply the motions that you go through. You do it because you were told to do it, and that's all you know. For Westerners studying in town, this is especially dangerous. They do something because they say, well, the Thai say to do it, but it's just the Thai way of doing things. They themselves would hold back a part of their mind, saying that when I get home, I'm not going to do it this way, I'm going to do it my way. It's like that image of the elephant in the suttas, who goes into the battle, but he holds back his trunk. He's going through the motions, but he's not really giving himself over the battle. That's one extreme. The other extreme, it's not so much thinking too much, it's thinking in the wrong way. Trying to figure things out beforehand so you don't have to go through the practice. In other words, assuming either the Buddha didn't know what he was talking about or the Buddha was playing a trick on us, and the whole point of the practice is to figure out the trick. He talks about an unconditioned, but then he describes a conditioned path. This obviously can't be true, or so the thinking goes. In other words, you try to figure out the path without doing it. A similar comment can be made about scholars who want to have the final word on what's the right interpretation of the text without really practicing themselves. They know all the definitions, they know all the words in the books, and they get established as authorities. That's thinking too much, thinking in the wrong way. The proper attitude is one that John Lee shows in his autobiography. He mentions at one point that when he first heard about eating only one meal a day, going into the forest to practice, it didn't make any sense to him. Why would you want to go into the forest? It's uncomfortable. It's dangerous. Wouldn't the practice be easier in a village, in more civilized surroundings? But he said everywhere you looked in the text, the Buddha kept recommending going into the forest, going into the wilderness. So he gave it a try. He took the Buddha at his word. Buddha went out there. He didn't simply sit out in the forest and say, okay, where are the results? He started thinking about, well, what is good about being in the forest? Why would this be good for the practice? And he came up with lots of answers. On the one end, it is quiet, and you have a lot more time for yourself. But it's also dangerous. And in the midst of the dangers, you realize you've got to depend on the Dharma to get you through your particular fears, your particular anxieties, the boredom, the restlessness. You have no distractions. So you find yourself committing yourself more and more to the Dharma as your refuge. It's a great passage in the Tathagata where monk out in the forest is sick. He said, here I am, I'm sick, what am I going to do? Am I going to go back, find a doctor? And he said, no, I'm going to depend on the 7 factors for awakening and the 5 strengths to fortify my mind. Whereas in the case of the Ajahns, there are many stories of Ajahns encountering tigers in the forest and realizing their only defense was metta. So they developed very strong metta for the tigers. So going into the forest, going to the wilderness, really forces you to hold on to the Dharma in ways that you wouldn't have to when you live in comfortable surroundings. And Ajahn Lee learned this, 1, through experience, and 2, through thinking about it. So this is how you understand the Buddha's teachings, both putting them into practice and thinking about them as you put them into practice. You take the Buddha at his word, but then you also try to figure out, well, why did he recommend this? What's good about this practice? What are the reasons behind it? During my time with the Ajahn Fuang, there were times when he would explain things, especially when it was obvious that this Fuang was pretty clueless on that particular matter. But he also commented one time, he said, if I have to explain everything to you, I will die. Which meant, of course, that it was up to me to try to figure things out, going on the assumption that, yes, there are reasons for this. Once you have that conviction, then you start understanding things. You start looking for why this is a good practice, how it's a useful practice. So it's in this way that understanding comes from conviction, as in that list of the 5 strengths. It starts with conviction, goes through persistence, mindfulness, concentration, and discernment. If you're convinced that there are reasons for these practices, that's the beginning. And then you stick with them, and it's through sticking with them in the activity itself you begin to see the good results that come out. You start connecting cause and effect. That's how conviction gives rise to discernment. One Ajahn I know in Thailand once made a comment on this. He said, notice the list doesn't start with perceptions or ideas or concepts. It starts with conviction. It's like being in a forest, again. If you're lost in the forest, if you're convinced that there's a way out, you're going to find it. At least you have the chance to find it. If you're convinced there's no way out, you're going to give up. So conviction leads to ingenuity. And ingenuity allows you to test different hypotheses as you practice. So as you're working with the breath here, remember, it's not just in, out, in, out. And the ways of working with the breath energy are not limited to the ones that are listed in the books. You can get some tips from the books. They can offer ideas of approaches you might try that you might not have thought of otherwise. But it's also good to try to figure out your own approaches, so you can come to your own understanding. The things you understand through having figured them out stick with you for a long time. Much longer than things you simply heard. So we take the Buddha at his word. There is a path, and it's a conditioned path, and it leads to the unconditioned. How does it do that? You give it a try. And see what it stirs up in your mind as you try to develop concentration, mindfulness, and all the other factors of the path. Sometimes it seems to stir up a lot more dust. Well, that's a good thing. If it didn't stir up the dust, you would have known the dust was there. And the next question is, how do you deal with the dust? How do you use the teachings to deal with that dust? As the Buddha once said, everything that you really need to know for the practice is there in the wings to awakening. So try to figure out which of the various lists is applicable to what you're going through right now. or as you're dealing with problems in the with the breath, as a John Furung once noted. All the issues in breath meditation are contained in those seven steps at the beginning of Method 2. And if you're convinced that that's the case, and it's not obviously there in those seven steps, well, what can you do to play variations on those steps? What are some of the implications of some of the steps that could apply to your particular problem? You know, as you explore these implications, you find that there's a lot more than you might see on the surface. And that's an important part of understanding the Dharma. Trying to figure out the implications. Learning how to take a few basic principles and work out their ramifications. So they speak directly to the problem you're facing right now. And you'll find it's a process of trial and error. Sometimes you'll come up with ideas that just really don't work out. Well, you know. You learn that from the practice. This is how the thinking and the acting go together. And that's the kind of thinking that's good thinking. If the thinking and the acting go together, then you can think an awful lot and it doesn't become too much. As John Furung once noted, John Lee was a very curious person, very inquisitive. He once commented that if he had met me, he probably would have spent a lot of time picking my brain. And that's the kind of person that discovered this breath meditation that we follow. And having that same attitude allows us to take the method and run with it, see how far it can go. So try to develop this attitude to all aspects of the practice. From the way we clean things in the monastery on up, there's a reason. And the best way to figure out the reason behind it is to do it. So when you take the Buddha at his word in this way, but also be very frank about your doubts. And try to resolve any conflict between the two. That's how things become clear.